himself with that tongue, Blood Crow said. He says he felt Kasiquana here, but was mistaken. He says this confusion means she was thinking about me, Oates said, needing no explanation. He may not be Fetch's bloodkin, but he was closer to her than either of her natural siblings. He'd grown up with her, helped train her, conspired with her, been hurt by her. These two may have come from the same womb as Izabeth, but that didn't make her more their sister than his. He possessed a lifelong love they could never touch. She may not have confided in him for months now, but Oates still knew her. She was in his marrow. The question remained, why him? As chief, Fetch forever carried the burden of her hoof's lives. She'd confessed that fear to him more than once. You didn't need to be a hoofmaster to worry for the safety of your fellow riders, Oates knew, but he also knew leadership compounded the worry. So why would ruin come to him above all the rest? What would frighten Fetching so much that her thoughts would turn to him so completely that it muddled whatever mystical twin hoodoo connected her to ruin? Oates didn't have the answer. Only Fetch would. He started running. Come on! He could have made directly for the river, but that meant cutting across the killing ground in front of the wall. So he kept his distance, skirting the hills. Ruin, Blood Crow, and that loathsome hyena stayed on his ass, all hampered by his pace. Ride with me, the elf said. It will be swifter. I ain't straddling no damn deer, Oates replied. Probably break its fragile spine. He thrust his fingers in his mouth and threw a whistle. The first was a dry, feeble expulsion. The second was ill-timed and eaten by a gun's report. But his third attempt was nice and sharp. Oates threw a fourth after 100 more steps, just to be sure. He meant to summon one hog, but nearly 50 soon caught up to them. It was the mixed hoof, anvil at their head, her tulwar bloodied to the hilt. Beside her, Thresh had her chain mace in hand. They'd been in a fight. Seeing Ruin, Anvil tensed for another one. A growl from Ruin betrayed he remembered her, too. Oates got between the hogs and the naked sorcerer, lifting his voice for the benefit of the riders who weren't bastards, those who hadn't encountered the fearsome Ukhul.
Easy! He's a friend. I know he looks like the father of all thicks, but he's...
Hells, there wasn't time to explain it all.
He's fucking worse, so don't cross him and be glad he's the war chief's ally. The elf, too.
Oates cocked a thumb at the hyena.
And that.
As the assembled mongrels muttered and cast dubious looks, Oates stepped to Anvil's side.
The cavaleros?
He asked, lifting his beard at her stained blade. Anvil nodded.
They rode out when our frails broke, Thresher said. Then we broke them.
Any losses?
4, Thresh replied. 1 against the cavaleros. Soon as we weren't in grips with them, the guns had something to say. Did for the other 3.
Her eyes drifted to Oates's injured hand, cradled close to his chest.
Looks like you lost the end of your clit diddler there, big bastard.
It's nothing. We need to get to the chief. Something ain't right.
Thresh cocked an eye at the betrayer.
Can't imagine what?
Oates heard Ruin give a disgusted snort and complain in Elvish.
He says, Blood Crow began, that my hog is close, Oates said, smiling at his fellow bastards. I know. I can smell him too.
Ugfok came running from the foothills, forcing the hyena to scamper out of his lumbering path. Oates mounted up, swallowing the pain as he gripped Ugg's patchy mane with his mangled fingers. His stockbow was gone, but he still had his tulwar at his side and a brace of javelins strapped to his tack. He nodded to Anvil.
To the river.
She spurred forward, leading the hoof into a gallop. Oates remained outside the column on the right, Blood Crow riding beside him. Ruin and his hyena had no trouble keeping up on foot.
Where are the fangs?
Oates demanded, pitching his voice over the thudding hooves.
They fell behind almost 12 days ago, Blood Crow replied. Tahanic refused to wait. Our mother could not sway him. This need to reach Cassiquana has gripped his spirit for nearly a moon's turn. You've been traveling a month? Where the hells were you? Dar guest. The orcish word sounded strange coming from the elf. Oates wasn't surprised. What they were doing in that deadly land he couldn't guess, but the deserts and jungles claimed by the orcs were also Ruin's home. According to Fetch, the orcs hated and feared her twin, viewing him as something between an animal and a god. Even with Ruin in their midst, the fangs of our fathers had taken a great risk trespassing beyond the gut. But they'd always been a loon-brained bunch of mongrels with queer notions about the fix. Likely Kulhoun and his boys had crossed the deluge using their stiff cods as boats. Riding alongside Blood Crow, Oates had a new appreciation for the elf's harrow stag. The Fang's hogs were notoriously hardy, yet they had fallen behind long before this spindle-legged animal. Perhaps it wasn't so fragile. There was no time for further questions. Ahead, the Guadalquivir reflected the light of the Betrayer across its broad back. Kalbarka's harbor lay upriver to the hoof's left, its towers transformed into torches by emerald flames. Beneath their lurid light, the battle upon the river raged. Nearest the hoof, the bulk of the Dramen listed in the water, its lolling hull rendering the menace of the great ship into a pathetic wreck. It had drifted away from the harbor before running aground near the opposite shore. Beyond, the war galleys grappled, close enough for Oates to see the surging silhouettes of men and mongrels fighting on the decks. The hoof reined up on the banks. With the galleys in the grip of battle, there were no vessels to act as a ferry. No part of Warbler's plan accounted for the riders in the Smelteds rejoining the main body. There was no choice. They had to get across. "Mongrels!" Oates called. "We're hogwashing!" The half-orcs hurried to dismount, doffing their boots and cramming them into saddlebags. Some took off their brigands and discarded them on the sand. All began inspecting their tack, tightening girth straps and securing quivers. All but three. Anvil, Caltrop, and Thresher aped the others, but their movements were uncertain, their expressions puzzled. This was the consequence of mongrels not getting years of slop training. They could be full of grit, deadly fighters, skilled riders, loyal to the bone, but rushing them into the saddle meant some drills were neglected. Oates hurried over, pulling Ugg by a swine yanker, and gestured for the three to gather. "Your hogs can swim this," he said, making sure his face was lit enough by the moon for Anvil to see. "They can carry you across, but not if you're on their back." Oates hunkered next to Ugfuck, gripping the saddle's gullet with one hand, the cantle with the other. He pressed himself close to the animal's side. "Put yourself on their upriver side. Don't put any downward pressure on them. Just hold, loose and light as you can, and let them do the work. Stick close to their ribs, but don't pull. Keep your feet up and out behind you like you're swimming. Kick if it helps, but don't snarl your hog's pace. If you don't drag them under or roll them, they'll make it. And remember, the current will take you farther downstream. Let it. Getting to the other side is all that matters. We'll make up the lost ground when we're back on land. Hogs will be a touch winded after, so don't push them." He let Thresher and Anvil continue with their preparations, but pulled Caltrop aside. The mongrel had never managed to conquer the weak frame from his days as a slave. It was as if the starvation and abuse the orc stains made him suffer clung beneath the skin, denying all meat and muscle from reaching his bones. It wasn't a body fit for surviving such a crossing. "I need you to ride back to Jacinto. Tell him what's happened. See if he can rally any of the hillmen. Go!" Caltrop gave a firm nod, the triple scars of the brand on his forehead brightened by the Betrayer. If he suspected Oates was giving him a pointless task to save his life, he didn't show it. Caltrop pulled his boots back on, swung into the saddle, and made swiftly for the hills. Oates lifted his next words for all to hear. We'll be well scattered on the other side, so the Drahman is our muster point.
He lifted a finger to the floundering ship.
That was the chief's first task, and it looks like she got it done. Need to find her, so that's where we'll start.
Bloodcrow related this to Ruin in Elvish, and the brute's gaze snatched to the wreck. He took off running up the bank. When he drew even with the Drahman, he leaped. Powerful as he was, even Ruin couldn't clear the width of the Guadalquivir, but he damn near reached the deck of the ship in a single bound.
Fuck me,
Malcontent swore, as the huge orc splashed down well beyond the mighty river's middle. Ruin surfaced and swam for the Drahman, borne swiftly by the sweeps of his massive arms.
Our turn,
Oates declared, and pulled Ugfuck into the shallows. All around, hogs and barefoot riders waded into the drink. Oates leaned down to Ug's ear.
Let's not drown. Bargain?
There was an answering grunt, and the big pig trundled forward. His hooves soon left the silt. Oates allowed himself to float, gritting his teeth against the first bite of the river's chill. He wanted to keep an eye on Anvil and Thresh, but his view was limited by Ugg's body. His injured hand went blissfully numb after a shock of pain, so he was able to grip the saddle's gullet, but he didn't put much trust in his mutilated fingers, forcing him to grasp the cantle harder than normal. Ugg strove against the weight, legs milling as he pushed through the water. The sounds of furious splashing, gasping mongrels, and squealing hogs quickly dispersed, replaced by the river's roar. Fact was, they wouldn't all make it. Crossing the Guadalquivir by hogwash was an act even the most seasoned nomad would avoid. The strength of the current, the roaring, the uncertainty of every moment, they all conspired to unnerve a mongrel. Some would panic, Oates knew. They'd pull on their hogs, forget their training, and try to scramble onto their back, thinking it a safer perch. Like all living creatures, a barbarian didn't fancy being drowned. They'd fight to live, even if it meant throwing their mongrel off to suffer the merciless river alone. All Oates could do was make damn certain it didn't happen to him. It was impossible to tell how far they'd come. Oates couldn't see the opposite shore, only the undulating swell of the dark water. He knew they were going faster downriver than across, but he didn't blame Ugg for that. Successfully crossing the Guadalquivir required endurance, not speed. Fortunately for Oates, from the day he first drew breath, Ugfuck had never known what it was to give up. After what seemed an eternity, the huffing hog dragged them both ashore. Oates got to his feet, relieved to see he wasn't the only one who had made it. Up and down the bank, mongrels were emerging from the river, seven that he could see. Oates made a swift inspection of his tack. Two javelins had been lost, but otherwise all had held. He retrieved his boots and pulled them on before hustling upriver, gathering the others on the way. Malcontent was among them, as well as Mope and Rabid. And Thresher. Oates had to suppress a sigh of relief when he saw her. The scarred mongrel had even managed to cross without losing her chain mace.
Incus?
She asked, as soon as she saw Oates. He could only shake his head. Thresher cast a searching look in either direction.
She'll make it, she said, breathing heavy. She'll make it.
By the time they reached the Drahman, Cutwolf, Stoat, Knucklechild, and a dozen others had joined their dripping company. But more than half their number was missing, including Anvil. Oates hoped they were only swept farther downriver before reaching shore. Surely that would be true of some. He suspected Anvil would catch up before long. She was strong, but more important, she was patient. Big Pox may have been an older hog, but he was well-trained. It was unlikely he'd fail to bring her across. Bloodcrow was already on shore near the Drahman when what was left of the smelted hoof arrived. Oates hadn't seen the elf begin the crossing. For all he knew, the pointier's queer stag could run on water. But as they drew closer, Oates saw animal and rider were soaked. Bloodcrow's war paint was washed half away, the diluted black streaking his sharp features, turning his face into an unsettling skeletal mask.
"She is not here," the elf said. The Dramen was half a thrum shot from the bank, the deck leaning sharply toward land. Ruin stood on the slanted surface, undiminished even by the massive warship.
"He says there is nothing but dead men."
Oates nodded. He could see them sprawled on board, a few floating in the shallows. Fetch and Jackal were to cripple the Dramen together. Warbler suspected Hisparatha would keep its wizards tucked safely in Kalbarka, but as a precaution, he thought it best they didn't split up for this opening gambit. The only thing that had ever been able to threaten the pair of them now stood upon the sinking mass grave of their making. Ruin jumped from the deck, his bulk hanging momentarily weightless at the top of the arc that brought him to shore. His hyena reached the hoof a moment later, drenched from the crossing. Oates yearned to give others the chance to catch up, to reduce the millstones of guilt churning away in his gut. But there wasn't time. This was the betrayer. Every moment brought death closer on hundreds of rampaging hooves. Oates kicked Ugg forward. The sounds of battle from the ships reached his ears. He snatched a look at the river. The waters leading to Kalbarka's harbor were a cauldron of violence. The war galleys from both sides were locked together, ensnared by ropes and grapnels, joined by the brutal kiss of the iron rams at their prows. The Guadalquivir was all but damned by the fractured flotilla. Bodies fell over the sides, leaped between the decks, threw themselves at one another in pressing mobs. Cries of pain and rage escaped from a locust song of clashing steel. Oates could feel the heat of the Alunan fire consuming the harbor towers from across the river. The hellish green flames would have rid the surrounding walls of defenders, sparing the galleys from thrum volleys and cannon fire. Still, it was impossible to tell if the White Wrists were winning the struggle. They were outnumbered. The Hispartans had two ships in the water for every one of theirs. Jackal was supposed to have joined the fight after the Dramen, but Oates couldn't make him out in the crush. As for Fetching, she was to join Warbler for the assault on the gate. The assembled hoofs stood waiting in the plains beyond the city's main gate. Unlike the bandits, Fetch hadn't wanted the riders seen. Distance, darkness, and the far side of a rise served to conceal them. Only a few scouts, hidden by cover and cunning, waited within sight of the walls, ready to blare a signal when the gates opened. Oates led his band away from the river and away from the city, fighting the urge to ride straight for the hoof's main body and, in doing, risk giving away its position. Only when Kalbarka was lost from view did he wheel back, approaching the mustered mongrels from the south. The sentry riders let him pass, but Oates could feel the confusion and tension he dragged through Fetch's army, spread by the sight of her preternatural brothers. He spied the bastards near the front of the throng. Polecat, Sluggard, Culprit, and Shedsnake watched him ride by. Thresher peeled off to join them, but there was no time for Oates to dally. He signaled for the rest of his riders to fold in with the great hoof. Oates brought Ruin and Bloodcrow to the hoofmasters. They sat their hogs away from the army, their council on the verge of boiling over. Notch was tense in the saddle, his usual confidence strained as he struggled not to shout at Warbler.
"Yet we should remain? We'd be fools, old thrice, and you know it! Give the order! Cease it!"
The flustered Shard's chief was cut off by Oates' arrival, or rather, Ruin's.
"Devils and all the hells,"
Pulpier swore, eyes going wide in his ugly face. Borlip's hand slapped the grip of his tulwar. Warbler turned, his gaze drawn by Ruin, but unlike the others, it wasn't imprisoned by the massive sorcerer. Instead, his attention shifted to Bloodcrow.
"Ia os kaganak, Nikisos," Warbler said, his slower elvish allowing Oates to catch the sound of the words.
Bloodcrow dipped his chin and replied. The tine tongue passed between thrice and elf for several moments, each exchange increasing Notch's aggravation, easing Borlip's grip on his sword, and doing nothing to Pulpier's sour grimace. Ruin spoke once during Warbler and Bloodcrow's quick conversation, the vexation in his wet, rumbling elvish testing the raw nerves of the chiefs. When all was said, Oates found Warbler's eyes on him. The look they shared was its own language. Warbler knew at least as much as Oates now. The chief was in danger, and clearly not here. Added to that was the betrayer and the unopened gate. Warbler had to tread carefully in his response, or he'd only strengthen Notch's argument to withdraw. But there was no time to think. He had to move fast, think even faster, and be cautious all the while. Oates didn't envy him.
"We attack now," Warbler said. Pulpier's face curdled.
"The gates remain closed."
"Yes." Warbler's eyes rested on Ruin. "But we have something that can breach them."
The disbelief on Notch's face split into a mocking grin. He shook his head, gestured at Ruin.
"We're now putting our trust in that?"
"He's..." Notch cut Oates off with an upward toss of his hand.
"I know what he is. We've heard the stories, even if the war chief doesn't like them told. But if she wanted the gate broken by a mongrel with the strength of all the hells, she could have done it herself, not gone off with that filthy waddler to take it by guile."
Oates managed not to throw a confused look at Warbler. Fetch left with Barsius? That wasn't part of the plan that he heard. And by Notch's piss-soaked attitude, it had been a surprise to him, too.
"Matters have changed," Warbler said. "Our task is the same. Take the city. We're riding to do that. Right damn now."
All ill humor vanished from Notch's face, replaced by a steely severity. He lifted a lone finger skyward.
"And that? Fucking thing could have appeared hours ago behind the clouds. The night is nearly as old as you are, Warbler. An experienced nomad shouldn't need to be reminded that there's a centaur grove between here and Strava. Another to the south, even closer. Horse cocks could be upon us at any moment."
Warbler remained placid.
"All the more reason to get ourselves behind those walls and not to dawdle in the doing. Now, get to your hoofs."
Notch's eyes glinted as he pondered further descent. Pulpier eyed him, waiting to see what the Shard chief would do. It was Borlip who broke the standoff.
"Come," the Tidesmaster said. "Warbler's right. We need to get this done."
Notch sucked his teeth, a slow nod building. Giving Ruin an appraising glance, he nudged his hog away. Oates spurred Ugfuck closer to Warbler's hog as soon as the chiefs were out of earshot.
"Fetch went with Barsius? When?"
Warbler spoke quickly. They didn't have long. Behind them, the mongrels, already prepared for the assault, were tightening their formation.
"He was here waiting when she arrived from the river. Said the gate was being watched by Kalbarka's wizards. The halfling claimed his folk couldn't take it unless they were dealt with first. Claimed he could get Fetch in unseen so she could help. I urged her to wait on Jackal, but..."
Oates huffed. Warbler didn't need to say the rest. Patience had never been one of Issa's gifts. She'd sobered some as chief, but with the night wearing on and the attacks on the harbor and western wall in progress, she'd had little choice. Oates tugged his beard in frustration.
"Barsius springs that on her. The gates still ain't open, and the fucking betrayer came without warning from Strava. That means..."
"Zirko fucked us," Warbler said. "His stub-fingered hand is gripping the knife in our back. Whatever this danger fetches in, it's that priest's doing. Fuck him eternal."
An end to the low tumult of shuffling hooves, hushed voices, and creaking harness told them the great hoof had solidified. The assembled mongrels waited now on the order to move. Oates could feel hundreds of eyes on him.
"This going to work?" he asked,
enough above a whisper so he didn't sound craven.
Warbler's craggy profile stayed locked on the surface of the rise, blocking their view of the city.
Reckon it has to. Best if the bastards ride in the vanguard, though, to prove our conviction.
Oates's sudden laugh caused the older Thrice to direct a frown at him.
Pardons, Oates said. Second time tonight I've had to charge Kalbarka just so others will follow.
Ought to change your hoof name to Mother Goose, Warbler said, with the hint of a grin. And yours to Gambler.
Join your brothers. Warbler made the smallest tilt of his head toward Ruin.
I need to speak with him.
Oates rode back to the main body. The true bastards met him in the center. Oates blew out a relieved breath to see Anvil now among them, her coarse hair still wet from the river.
That the chief's twins?
Culprit asked, stretching in the saddle to wave at Ruin and Bloodcrow.
Hello, Fetch's twins!
None in the trio now holding council acknowledged the japing rider. It was odd, seeing Warbler so close to Ruin. The hoary-headed old Thrice sat his hog and still had to look up when speaking with the naked, hulking Uhul.
They're not both her twin, fool-ass, Shedsnake said. Just the big one.
Oh.
Culprit kneaded his half-shaved head.
Thought the pointier was her brother, too.
He is. He's her half-brother.
Right, the elf half. The big one is the orc half.
Snake was flummoxed. What?
The chief is half-orc and half-elf. Those two are them.
Are you?
No. The elf and Fetch have the same mother. So does she and the orc, right?
Yes, but he's not an orc, just fathered by one. Same as the chief.
I know, and the chief's mother was an elf. So she had one orc, one elf, and the chief, who is half-orc and half-elf.
But that's not how it...
That would make them triplets and still make no sense.
Thresher leaned toward Shedsnake.
You realize he's just yanking your cod, right?
Culprit managed a straight face for a heartbeat longer, but Snake's slack-jawed uncertainty caused him to burst.
Hells, you're such a child, Snake said, trying to slap his giggling brother's head. But Sluggard was between them, a good-natured barrier for Culprit to duck behind.
Oates smiled. It had been too long since he'd ridden with all of them, and even now they weren't whole. Oates didn't bother to ask where Hoodwink was. The chief had taken him aside during the planning at Black Knuckle. As always, he had a shadow task to perform.
If you mongrels want to stop grabbing ass and put thrums in your hands,
Warbler called as he rode up. Ruin went the opposite direction, striding off over the rise with only his hyena. Bloodcrow rode away to the west.
Rather grab ass, Polecat mumbled, but unslung his stockbow.
Where are they going? Thresh asked.
I asked Nikisos to return to our ships and find Jacko. Tell him what's happened, Warbler replied.
Oates was annoyed with himself. He could have thought to do that when they passed the harbor. No doubt Bloodcrow was a strong swimmer, and he could leap nearly as far as Ruin thanks to whatever magic was trapped within his club.
As for the other, he's agreed to open Kalbarka's gates.
The bastards grew still. The thought of being aided by Ruin wasn't a comfortable one, but none were willing to gainsay Warbler.
Scrounge this for you, Shedsnake told Oates, offering a thrum and full quiver.
Oates nodded in appreciation and took the weapon, but he couldn't quite manage to tie the quiver to his tack with his crippled fingers. Snake did it for him, while Oates threw the stockbow strap over his head and arm. Warbler gave them all an appraising look.
Who wants to say it? He asked.
I do, Sluggard replied.
Warbler gave him a permissive dip of the chin. Sluggard swept them all with a small, fond smile.
Live in the saddle, bastards.
Their replies were quiet but firm.
Die on the hog.
Warbler looked beyond them, surveying the army for a long moment before turning his hog. He kicked old friend forward, and the true bastards fell into pace, fanning out on either side. Behind them, the mongrel army rumbled to motion. They took the gentle slope at a walk.
As Ugfuck crested the masking rise, Oates felt his heart begin to knock uncomfortably against his breastbone. Again, Kalbarka waited for him, farther away now than it had been at the foot of the Smelteds. The approach was longer, wider, flatter. The hoof boasted but a tenth of the bandit's numbers and could spread out, covering the distance at far greater speed, but only as far as the river. The Guadalquivir provided Kalbarka's greatest defense from this direction. To cross its imposing expanse and reach the gate, the hoof would be forced onto the old imperial bridge. The ancient construction was wide enough for nearly 10 hogs to traverse abreast, but still the hoof would be forced to cluster, to slow. They would be vulnerable at the choke point. Without the gates open, the bridge was nothing but a butcher's block. The half-orcs, however, had a living battering ram. Oates could see ruin ahead, his hyena at his leg. Still outside the range of the defenses, they hadn't yet broken into a run. Likely the garrison could see them now too, though none of the frails would be hawk-eyed enough to pick out the details. For now, they'd spy only a lone figure and a dog. Perhaps some keen man would notice both were larger than they should be. It wouldn't be long now before Ruin's nature would be revealed. Once he started running, the garrison would see what they thought to be a massive fick. If there were wizards at the gate, perhaps they'd have knowledge of what he was, try to stop him. Regardless, the guns would sound, signaling the hoof to spur their hogs into a gallop. It wouldn't be long now. The hyena snapped to a stop, ears standing erect as its muzzle swung around. Ruin halted and followed its gaze. Stark still, both looked east, staring into the distance above the hoof's right flank.
"The hell's they doing?" Culprit asked.
Warbler's arm was half raised to signal a halt when they heard it. The rolling thunder of hooves. Polecat's face went slack in the moonlight.
"No."
The tremoring sent a ripple of uncertainty through the hoof. Mongrels began pulling their hogs to a stop. Oates watched Warbler's jaw clench. Another choice, every heartbeat closing the chance to make it. They could flee, away from the yet unseen enemy, away from Kalbarka, from the attack, from the chief, or... Warbler stood tall in the saddle, sweeping his arm toward the city.
"Ride!"
Oates kicked Ugfuck into a gallop, casting quick glances eastward, hoping not to see what he knew was coming. Not yet, damn it. Not yet. Ahead, Ruin charged, triggering the first spate of cannon fire. Heedless, he bowled between columns of erupting earth. He wouldn't be stopped, Oates knew. He would reach the gate. If he could smash through, open a path for the hoof, there was a chance. They only needed a few more. The centaurs came in an avalanche from the edge of darkness.
"Shit!"
Culprit screamed.
"Shit, shit, shit!"
The size of the herd was a mind-trampling nightmare. A wall of murder lust birthed from the night. Oates had fought twice at Strava during the Betrayer, stood with the Unyars against hundreds of the Beastmen. Never before had he seen so many as now, and he knew, with sickening despair, that those he beheld were only the four of an uncountable horde. The centaurs were closer to the city, surging toward the hoof with ravening speed. The hogs seared the dust at full gallop, huffing headlong for the gate. It wasn't enough. The centaurs would cut them off before they gained the bridge.
"Warbor!"
Oates screamed.
"I see it!"
Warbler raised a crooked arm, signaling a shank shot. Oates repeated the gesture, hoping it would be passed back down the length of the column. He loaded his stock bow just in time to pull Ugfuck hard to the right. For several horrible heartbeats, they faced the stampede. Shrill, blood-crazed shrieks poured from gaping mouths as the centaurs celebrated what they believed to be the beginnings of a slaughter, a forest of jostling spears raised above their wild-haired heads. But the half-orcs followed Warbler around in a tight wheel, bringing their left side to face the horsecocks. As the hogs cut across the centaur's line, the riders trained their stock bows and loosed, sending a cascading volley into the herd. Oates didn't see where his bolt struck,
but it was impossible to miss the oncoming wave. Completing the wheel, he fled. As he came about, he saw the great hoof moving in a perfect, unbroken spiral of two offset columns, allowing gaps for the second rank to shoot. The rearmost riders had been forced to turn quicker, tighter, in order to prevent the horse cocks from overtaking them, but all completed the maneuver, hurling death and defiance with every thrumbolt. All save the shards. Oates could see the tails of the crimson sashes wrapped about Notch's head and waist trailing behind him as he led his band away from the fight, fleeing southwest. The shards had cut away without risking the shank shot. Another betrayal added to the knight's tally. Warbler kept the rest of the army moving, gaining enough distance on the centaurs for another shanker. A second volley added to the slain. They may as well have tried to kill the Titan's ocean for all the good it did. The centaurs trampled their fallen without care, swallowed them up, and kept coming. There weren't enough bolts in the hoof's quivers to kill even half of the maddened herd. And it was too late to run. Centaurs beneath a betrayer moon possessed a dreadful vigor. Stronger and faster, they would pursue their quarry without need of rest, with no thought to mercy, and there was not a hog born that could outpace them for long. Already, the hoofs struggled to keep away from their grasp. Deranged as they were, the horsecocks weren't brainless. The herd began to spread out, their far superior numbers consuming the open ground. Soon, the hoof would be swept toward the walls, toward the guns. Warbler saw the danger. Guiding the hoof with precision through the ever-shrinking eye at the center of the howling storm, he brought them around to face Kalbarka. The centaurs blocked their view of the bridge, though the gatehouse was visible above. Warbler drew his tulwar and signaled a tusker. Steel scraped into the air as 300 riders drew swords, spurring their hogs into a charge with a belligerent war cry. Not since the incursion had the half-orcs fought in such numbers. Oates should have felt unconquerable amongst the pounding hooves of so many barbarians, but the swarm of baying tors made a mockery of their might. The hoof charged a monstrosity with 1,000 faces, a collective maw that could eat the world. The riders on the wings loosed a volley before drawing tight, narrowing and strengthening the spearhead. Tors went down in a tangle of flailing limbs, but the herd's countercharge was not stalled. Sword raised, Oates snatched a javelin from the brace. Staying in the saddle with nothing but his legs, lungs pouring out a scream he couldn't hear, Oates rode with the bastards in the vanguard, the piercing head that had to break through, or the hoof would not reach the bridge. Only Warbler rode ahead of him, nearly close enough to touch. The vanguard flung their javelins at the last moment. Oates put all the strength of his arm and Ugg's charge behind the throw. The felled centaurs were crushed between the earth and the hooves of the unflinching herd. Their ugly deaths were the last thing Oates saw before the impact that nearly knocked him from the saddle. His sword was useless, the spears of the centaurs impotent. Only the tusks of the hogs mattered. They cut a bloody, bone-snapping furrow through the herd, using the horsecock's own speed to kill them. Following hard an old friend's wake, Ugfuck kept his head low, shoulders strong, as he dug a tunnel through a mountain of meat. The bastards were the front of a plow blade, the cutting edge of a wedge formed by the rest of the great hoof. The centaurs were soil soaked in blood. Yet even the wettest ground holds stones, blunting and slowing the blade. The stones that impeded the hoof were fired from Kalbarka. The walls boomed, tearing chunks out of the massed centaurs. Oates saw their mangled forms popping up ahead, lifted on cradles of mud and smoke. He heard hogs squeal behind him and knew the cannonballs were killing more than the enemy. The garrison had waited, damned them. The centaurs had been in range since they appeared, but the frails waited until the hoof was mired in battle before igniting the guns. Oates didn't know how many of his brothers and sisters were dying. He couldn't look back. Forward. He had to look, had to move. Forward. Ugfuck began to tire, slowing with every tor he struck.
Oates added his tulwar to the hog's efforts, hacking to their exposed left. His blade slashed flesh and battered the hafts of spears, keeping the roiling herd at bay, clearing the way for the mongrel behind. Culprit. It should have been Culprit. But Oates couldn't hear him. His ears were drowned by the pitched exultations of the centaurs, the deep pool of their voices broken only by plunging gunstones. At the spear's tip, Warbler and old friend strove to cut a path. The old thrice's sword never stilled, his white hair stained pink with gore. At his right flank, opposite Oates, Thresher made good on her hoof name, her chain mace hard at work. Still, the tusker began to falter, bogged down by the immense weight of the foe. Soon they would grind to a halt. To stop was to die. Nearly 300 mongrels had formed this charge. Oates didn't know how many were still alive behind him, but they'd all sink beneath the relentless tide of the centaur herd if they didn't soon reach the bridge. Through the ragged edge of the press, Oates spied the white stones. Warbler waded toward them, fighting with undiminished fervor. He lopped legs, smote skulls, bailing blood. Oates made damn certain he kept up. There was no art to the fighting. It was desperate butchery, fending off a horde of deranged spear thrusts with his own wild strokes. Oates kept his sword in motion, trusting his hog and his fellow riders. As if freed from a tethered anvil, Ugfuck burst from the crush. The night sky loomed huge above, rescued from the suffocating clutch of battle. Ugg's hooves rasped upon the stone of the bridge, a confined road leading from the belly of one beast to the teeth of another. Kalbarka's gatehouse yawned at the far end, promising death if they approached. Thrumbolts arced and hissed from the top, snapping against the stones. Oates spurred Ugg on, knowing the guns would follow. They fired from the walls, the towers, but the shots howled overhead, none striking the bridge. Did the frails fear its destruction? If so, it was a foolish, fortunate caution. Oates rode hard through the scattered thrum shots, speed his only shield. He heard Thresher snarl. Glancing right, he saw her face was set in a grimace, but there was no wound that Oates could see. Like him, she pushed her barbarian, racing for the gate. The shattered gate. The last measure of the bridge steamed, the cobbles swamped and shiny. Murder holes in the gatehouse drooled black tar, the last lazy remnants of dumped cauldrons. The hogs jumped the noxious slick, barreling through the twisted remains of the huge gatehouse doors. They didn't slow through the length of the tunnel. Whatever the Hisparthans had waiting to meet them would be best hit hard. And they needed to make way for the rest of the hoof, those who survived. The centaurs would follow, bringing their rampage into the city. The fight within the walls would be bitter, but the frails wouldn't be helped by the centaurs' invasion. Neither would the hoof. This night's terror would only fatten. The Hisparthans had placed a cadre of cavaleros to stand against a breach at the gate. These weren't low-born exiles in steel caps and scale coats, but heavy horse in fitted plate. Oates couldn't guess at their numbers. Ruin had torn them to pieces. The wide street beyond the gate was a charnel pit of dying horses, dismembered men, and corpses crushed within dented, leaking armor. Ruin's hyena savaged a screaming horse, jaws clamped on its throat. The devil dog's back was lacquered with cooled tar, as was the flesh of its master. Ruin stood near the center of the carnage, tearing the last living cavalero from the saddle and slamming his fist full into the face mask of the man's helm. The metal caved, as did the skull beneath. The frail's armor rattled with his dying convulsions. There was no sign of further opposition on the street, but the walls were barnacled with men. Ruin's massive body invited the thrumbolts that failed to harm him. They came haphazard from the top of the gatehouse and the walls to either side. The hoof's appearance gave them other targets. Warbler barreled up the street, past Ruin. Oates and the others split to ride around the Ukul, a river of hog flesh parting before a boulder. The street emptied into a square. Warbler used the space to turn the hoof and form up.
Oates made a quick count as the mongrels pulled their hogs to face the gate once more. 20 had reached the square, perhaps less, but more were streaming through the gate, through the spitting hail of missiles from the defenders.
"Thrums!"
Warbler shouted, causing blades to be sheathed, stockbows unslung and loaded. The riders in the square loosed at the gatehouse, the walls. Kalbarka didn't possess battlements on the inward-facing side, leaving the garrison unprotected. Men dropped, some falling off the wall. A second flight sent many scurrying to escape the raking volleys. The gate tunnel spewed a torrent of hoof riders that quickly ebbed to a trickle before ceasing entirely. Oates looked around as the last mongrel reached the square. 20. Barely 100. The faces surrounding him were slack with the same truth. 20. Not even all the bastards were there. As Oates took in those nearest to him, his heart sank at the missing. Culprit. Polecat. Anvil.
"You see them fall?"
he asked, looking at Sluggard, Shed Snake, Thresher. He was answered with silence and head shakes.
"Some are still out there!"
a blood-covered brother with tusk-tied tattoos exclaimed.
"My chief and some others! Horsecock surrounded them before they got to the bridge!"
"Then they're dead," Pulpier said.
"Not all of them," Warbler rumbled. "Not yet. Or the horsecocks would already have come through."
He spurred old friend forward. Oates and the bastards and more kicked their hogs to follow. But not all. Pulpier remained where he was, anchoring the remaining brotherhood and a dozen more.
"We'll not," he spat.
Warbler didn't turn.
"No, you'll take the gatehouse."
"Damn you, old thrice!"
Warbler didn't slow, ignoring the hoofmaster's shouted abuses.
"I'll take the gatehouse, to have a good vantage of the Tors tearing you apart! You're fools, all of you that follow him! Fucking fools! The horsecocks will rip you to pieces! You've no chance! They're animals! Nothing but vicious animals!"
Pulpier's protest struck Oates' ears, even as his eyes fell upon the hyena, now feasting on the entrails of a horse. Ruin was nowhere to be seen. Oates slowed Ugfuck. Warbler and the bastards were already in full gallop, entering the tunnel gate. Oates broke away, keeping to the street, ignoring the shouted rebukes from the other hoof riders, thinking he'd lost his nerve. It took only a moment to find the bloody, bare footprints. Oates followed the tracks down a narrower lane. He didn't worry about an ambush from the garrison. Ruin's passage would have unmanned any frails with a mind toward resistance. Oates found him across another broad street framed with dilapidated structures raised during the orc occupation. Scrub grass grew between the cobbles. There was no sign of restoration or habitation. Like much of Kalbarka, the street remained abandoned. The perfect place to move in secret if you'd a mind to take the gate from within, as Barsius had promised. Ruins squatted by a low arch housing a barred culvert, one of many drains to the city's ancient sewers. Grasping the grate, the brute flexed and stood, breaking the stone and casting it aside in one motion. The hole left behind was still too small for his bulk. He began hammering at the rough edges with his fists.
"We need your help!"
Oates shouted in Orcish. Ruin ignored him, continued to smash through the masonry. Oates gained his attention by shooting a bolt into the back of his skull. The Uhul whirled around, face twisted with anger.
"She's down there,"
Oates said, tipping his stockbow at the sewer opening. It wasn't a question. His next words were,
"Is she dead?"
Ruin glowered. He shook his head.
"Then she can wait," Oates said, the words almost choking him. "The centaurs are slaughtering us. We need you."
Again, the brute shook his head.
"Kasikwana."
He turned to the hole once more, fists rising.
"You're not saving her by letting us die!"
The raw rage in Oates' voice halted Ruin. The orcs named their warriors after the strongest parts of their bodies. Ulyud, Tuhuruk, Duv, Mahar. But the hoof riders weren't Fetch's hands or arms or teeth.
"The half-bloods dying out there are her heart. She's their chief. What do you think will happen to her when she hears they're gone? You won't have saved her, Urul Targabal. Not if you don't save them.
Ruin's frown deepened.
You've magic, Oates pressed. Power over beasts. There's too many in that herd for you to kill. Not in time, but...
His words were cut off by Ruin smiting the stones once more. Ugfuck balked at the flying debris.
To the hells with you, then,
Oates told the brute, pulling his hog around. They surged back through the streets. There was fighting along the walls. Pulpier and his mongrels had set to the task of taking the gatehouse. Oates raced through the darkness of the tunnel and emerged onto the moon-bathed bridge. At the far end, his brethren hurled themselves at the centaurs. They must have forced a hold in the eclipsing herd, for wounded mongrels staggered on foot away from the battle. Oates passed the corpses of several who'd escaped the press, only to be shot down from the walls. Clumps of unhogged riders took cover behind the plinths along the bridge. Once home to imperial statues, they supported nothing now but amputated stone feet. Warbler had left a rear guard to hold the bridgehead so they wouldn't be cut off again, but the screen was faltering against the weighted fury of the centaurs. Oates shouted to the limit of his lungs, waving for the rear guard to make room. Ugfuck plunged through the gap. Oates feathered the first centaur in his path, loosing from so close that the bolt punched clear through the filly's head. Ugfuck knocked her collapsing body aside and gored the horse cocks beyond. Letting his stock bow fall to the end of its strap, Oates drew steel just in time to parry an incoming spear and whip his blade beneath the bearer's arm. The limb was half sheared away, but the centaur kept fighting, kept spewing screams and frothing spit. A crosscut took his head off. Warbler's charge had won through to the others. Oates could see them through the press of tors that came flooding back to fill the swath. He cut his way through to the pocket of ground held by his brothers, a hard-pressed ring of hogs defending mongrels on foot. Seeing him coming, Thresh, Shed Snake, and Sluggard pushed their hogs forward, enough to form a gap. Oates and Ugfuck killed until they reached it, turning to solidify the ring once more. Before he did, he caught a glimpse of the hogless survivors, perhaps 60 in all. Anvil was among them, supporting a dazed and weakened Borlip, half her face awash in blood. Hells, she was missing an eye. Two riders to Oates's left, beyond Sluggard, Polecat fought against the rock slide of horse flesh, ceaselessly issuing a frantic chant.
You won't fucking get me! You won't fucking get me! You won't fucking get me!
The ring of riders tried to move, to grind their way to the bridge and the rear guard, but the centaurs were a vice, constricting them with endless waves of berserking wrath. Even the dead were a hindrance, the large bodies of the tors building a grisly barrier to bar the hoofs' way. They were trapped. Oates's arm grew leaden against foes that did not tire. The hogs were forced back by the onslaught, collapsing the ring. Thresh's barbarian, pierced by spears in the neck, chest, and shoulders, finally succumbed. As the animal dropped, Thresh flung herself backward over the saddle and inside the ring. Oates pulled Ugg back and found himself fighting side by side with a nomad he didn't know. The mongrel died a heartbeat later, torn from his saddle by the empty, grasping hands of the centaur he'd run through a moment before.
You won't fucking get me! You won't fucking won't!
Again, Oates gave ground to keep the ring unbroken. He no longer knew who was beside him. To look away from the herd for a moment would invite death. His arm burned to keep his tulwar aloft and swinging, chopping at a forest of spears. It would fail him soon. He wanted to die fighting, but it was likely the horsecocks would slay a staring, dull-eyed, breathless lump of spent flesh. The centaur before him reared, the front legs of its stallion body churning in the air, spear poised to plunge. A terrible wail split the air. The rearing centaur toppled, thrashed upon the ground, spear forgotten as the beast man clutched at his skull, face contorted with agony. All around, the horsecocks began to buck, their war cries strangled by torment. Those that remained on their feet ran wild, scattering the herd.
The wall of savagery crumbled before Oates's eyes, allowing him a view of the bridge. Upon a plinth at the center of the ancient span, taking the place of whatever frail marble emperor had once been installed, stood Ruin. His stance was wide, torso hunched, head bowed. Even from a distance, Oates could discern the slow, irregular flexing of his fingers, the muscles of his entire body tensed to the point of quivering. The centaurs howled in defiance, fought his sorcerous dominion. They gained nothing but pain. They collapsed in the hundreds, heavy forms crashing to the mud, limbs flailing. Thrumbolt thudded into helpless hides as the hoof wakened from certain death to find an opportunity for a reckoning. Oates didn't bend his thrum to the slaughter. His attention was fixed on Ruin. The brute fell to his knees, a hand gripping the edge of the plinth. His head began to rise. Oates saw his chest expand, his mouth opening as a scream emerged, born from the depths of prodigious pain. Ruin's cry overpowered the strained voices of the centaurs, his face lifting skyward, revealed in a concentrated beam of moonlight. Oates looked to the betrayer. Its fullness waned before his eyes. It happened so fast, Oates couldn't swear he saw it true, but the light fled the moon, shot down the beam, and struck Ruin, an arrow from the heavens. The stricken Uhul's scream was cut off as he was knocked from the pedestal, lifted into the air by the force of that celestial blow. Ruin's bulk was thrown over the width of the bridge and vanished over the side. The Guadalquivir claimed him with an uproarious splash. The centaur struggled desperately to rise and began to flee. Many were cut down by vengeful hoof riders before they could gain their feet. Oates startled, raising his sword as the Tor nearest him shot up. The look on the centaur's face stayed his hand. It was clear-eyed, confused, and terror-struck. Oates let his arm fall. The Tor took flight, joining the receding waters of the running, defeated herd.
Chapter 23. A single shot punched from the wall east of the gate. The ball landed well short of the depleted hoof, churning nothing but earth and the dead. No others followed. Whether the crews were slain, fled, or simply out of stones, Oates couldn't say, but the lone shot was reminder enough that the mongrels were far from safe. Warbler's resonant voice cut through woolly exhaustion.
Look for wounded!
Oates hadn't known if the old thrice had survived until that moment. The order demanded speed, to sift the injured from the slain. A grim task that needed to be done swiftly. Oates heard the movement of other hogs, the voices of his fellow riders, some calling out names of favored brothers, most lifted in wordless misery. He was too afraid to turn and behold the loss, to make it real with the touch of his eyes. One voice, familiar but altered, provided proof that at least one other bastard came through alive.
Not going. Not fucking going. Not going to.
Oates guided Ugg to Polecat. He still sat his hog, animal and rider covered in blood. Hells they all were. Cat's sword continued to make feeble cuts at the air, the barbarian beneath him sidling to keep them balanced. The eyes in his hatchet face bulged.
Not going to get me.
Not me.
Fucking not me.
Slowly, Oates reached up and placed a hand around Cat's fist, ceasing the sluggish sword strokes. Cat lowered his arm.
Chief didn't get a warning, he said,
voice more air than sound. No, Oates replied. Polecat's head swiveled to face him. His expression was leagues away.
Did he survive?
Who, Cat?
The chief! Salts! The horse cocks get him? Is he alive?
Oates grit his teeth, swallowed a curse at the injustice. Salts had been the name of the rudder's hoofmaster, killed, along with most of his brethren, during a betrayer moon near 10 years ago. No, Cat, Oates said. He's not. Polecat's face didn't change.
It remained blank.
Oh, they didn't get me.
Oates clasped his shoulder. No. A gormless grin twitched at the corner of the former Rudder's mouth. He'd stood firm in body, but his mind had fled. It was only the beginning of the cost. Culprit wouldn't allow anyone near Shed Snake's body. He sat among the carnage, slumped against a dead barbarian, hugging Snake close, weeping upon his brow.
You have to promise not to burn him,
Culprit pleaded, toneless with tears.
He wouldn't want that. He wouldn't want to be burned.
Sluggard crouched nearby, hand outstretched. We won't.
You have to promise. The chief has to promise.
Culprit's swollen face shifted up to Oates. The young mongrel's naked despair hovered above Shed Snake's open, sightless eyes.
Oates, he's gone, Oates. I didn't see it. I don't know how it... Hells!
Oates wanted to get down from his hog, to grieve, to give himself over to the anger and the anguish as Culprit did. But there wasn't time. Warbler saved him from being the cruel fuck. The old thrice rode up, jumped down from the saddle, and took a hard step toward Culprit. Time to move, bastard. Let him go.
You need to swear.
Warbler squatted, thrust his face toward Culprit's with such fury, the younger half-orc quailed.
I can't swear, son. I don't know if there'll be any of us left alive to tend him at all. City ain't ours yet. And that moon may be dim now, but I won't wager against it turning again. We don't survive, then we won't have a say what happens to our fallen. The Hisparthans may throw him in a pit with all these others alongside the Tars that killed them, or they may burn them. You don't want that to happen. You need to get up, you need to leave him behind, and you need to help kill every last fucking Frail behind those walls. Do you hearken me, boy?
Culprit's puffy face hardened around the mouth. There was a mote of hatred for Warbler in his nod. Oates couldn't blame him. Warbler returned to old friend and rode off, rumbling orders. Sluggard took Snake's weight, allowing Culprit to shuffle from beneath the body. Rubbing his eyes with the back of a hand, Culprit gave Slug a nod and took his friend once more. He eased Snake's head to the ground.
I'll be back for you, brother.
Culprit stood and went for his hog, but stopped short. He went back to Shed Snake, knelt, and made sure Snake's half-cape covered his burn-scarred arm. Standing again, Culprit faced Oates and Sluggard, though he didn't meet their eyes.
In case the sun's up before we get back, he explained, voice growing thick.
The hoof gathered its wounded and returned to the bridge, quick as the walking would allow. They were 71 mounted mongrels. Of the 68 on foot, barely half were hale enough to still fight. Anvil insisted she was one of them, despite half a dozen deep wounds, to say nothing of the spear thrust that took her right eye. She'd tied a rag over the grisly socket, waved off Thresh's help, and moved toward the city with a steady stride. Oates paused at the bridgehead to look over the side, searching for sign of ruin. There was nothing but dark water lapping at the stone foundations. He wondered, distantly, if an Ukhul could drown. The possibility stirred nothing within him. Perhaps that made him an uncaring cunt. Perhaps he'd simply left his capacity for sorrow a few hundred strides behind. Just another dead thing discarded on a bed of gore. No bolts or gunstones beset their passage into the city. Half-orc stood in the embrasures atop the gatehouse in place of men. The streets beyond the tunnel were clear, save for the mess ruin made of the cavaleros. But there was a new corpse lying among the men and horses, Ruin's hyena, sprawled on its side. There was no wound, no sign of violence. The beast had simply died where it stood, sharing the fate of its master as it shared his dread resilience. Warbler worked quickly, directing the wounded into the nearest buildings, ordering those without hogs to stand guard and reinforce the gate. Pulpier came down from the wall, a bitter twist to his mouth. The remaining chiefs gathered in the shadow of the gatehouse, protected by a screen of hog riders. Oates stuck with Warbler. He needed to get to Fetch as soon as matters were sorted here.
The Frails have fallen back, Pulpier declared. Far as I can see, they've abandoned the walls.
They'll have a strong point deeper in the city, Warbler said. A place to hold out. I'd wager they barricaded the old garden palace.
Let them stay there, Pulpier replied. It is time we were away.
Borlip sat slumped on a barrel of abandoned gunpowder near the stairs to the wall. He'd taken a spear through the gut. He was dead soon and knew it, but until then, he was chief of the Tusked Tide.
I won't leave my injured, he said, throat clogged with pain.
If any were left behind, Borlip would certainly be among them. But not even Pulpier was callous enough to throw that truth in the expiring mongrel's face.
Go if you've a mind to, Warbler told the Brotherhood's master. But I'm taking this city, else all this was for nothing.
Before Pulpier could answer, a call from above drew their attention.
Got some fucks approaching, chief,
a cauldron brother yelled, pointing toward the harbor.
They're ours!
Blackened with soot, smeared with blood, the white wrists came rushing toward the gate, some atop the wall, more along the streets. Jackal led the mongrels above, his desert garb sodden and tattered. Bloodcrow was behind him, afoot. In the street, Thune towered above the wrists, carrying a cannon barrel in his hand like a club. The Cyclops had been given no role in the attack, at Anvil's insistence, but here he was, long amber locks hanging in wet twists. Jacintho hurried beside the lumbering Itinian. Spying Oates, the bandit ran over, cracking a smile.
Ever clung to a giant's back while he swam the Guadalquivir and then climbed a city wall, big bastard?
Jacintho asked.
Neither had I.
Caltrop found you, Oates said.
Jacintho nodded.
Thune set off as soon as the words left the thrice-freed's lips. I suspect he understands more Hisparthan than we credit.
Anvil came forward to meet the Cyclops. She said something to him, too quiet to hear from where Oates sat, but the jab of her finger bespoke a chastisement. Thune remained silent. He pushed Anvil's matted hair away from her face with his smallest finger, revealing the blood-soaked rag over her eye.
It appears they share more than a language now, Jacintho said.
It was a grim jest, but uttered with a quiet regret. Jackal came down the wall stairs two at a time. Oates could see him taking in the casualties even on the move. His face was set, vexation housed in the tightness of his jaw.
How many are you? Warbler asked, wasting no time.
Shy of 200, Jackal replied. The Frails did not want to let go of the harbor gate.
Wizards?
One.
You kill him?
Her. Yes.
Reckon there'll be more. Hope your ship boys have more fight in them. We got one waiting.
Oates let them talk. Dismounting, he went to Blood Crow. The elf had come down from the wall and moved immediately to the dead hyena. His eyes never left the animal while Oates explained, as best he could, what happened. Blood Crow's face betrayed no emotion, but Oates saw him swallow hard.
I must find him, the Tyne warrior said, turning toward the gate.
Oates grabbed his arm.
What about Fetch?
Bloodcrow stared at Oates's hand until he let go.
I am not honor-bound to Kasiquana. My pledge is to my mother, and through her, my brother.
He's likely dead.